Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Supreme Court's unexpected ruling upholding Obama's signature Affordable Care Act. First, John Dean joins us to discuss the legal reasoning behind the court's 5-4 decision. He is the former counsel to President Nixon and was chief minority counsel to the House Judiciary Committee and Associate Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Then Dr. Susan Wood joins us to discuss what the Affordable Care Act means for women and children who would have suffered most of the impact of its repeal. She is a professor of health policy and executive director of the Jacobs Institute for Women's Health at George Washington University School of Public Health and Health Services. Then we'll hear from Paul Starr, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning professor of sociology at Princeton University and was a senior advisor to the Clinton Health Plan and is the author of Remedy and Reaction, The Peculiar Struggle Over Healthcare Reform. We will discuss how the Affordable Care Act will be enacted in the face of Republican resistance and Mitt Romney's vow to repeal it on his first day in office. Then we'll speak with one of the leaders of a demonstration against Walmart opening a new store in downtown Los Angeles. Maria Elena Durazo, the Secretary-Treasurer of the LA County Federation of Labor, joins us to discuss why she and 10,000 protesters are marching to oppose Walmart, a retailing giant whose six heirs to the fortune of founder Sam Walton today own more wealth than the bottom 30% of Americans. Joining us now is John Dean, who is the former counsel to Richard Nixon and prior to that was chief minority counsel to the Judiciary Committee of the United States House of Representatives, the associate director of the Law Reform Commission, and associate deputy attorney general of the United States. Today, John Dean is a best-selling author of such books as Blind Ambition and Lost Honor, and more recently, Worse Than Watergate, The Secret Presidency of George W. Bush, Conservatives Without Conscience, Broken Government, How Republican Rule Destroyed the Executive Legislature and Judicial Branches, and Pure Goldwater. He's also a columnist at Justia.com. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Dean.
Thank you, Ian.
And today is obviously a big day, a big surprise for most people. It's interesting that the punditry had predicted before the hearings, the public hearings in the Supreme Court, that there was no way in the world that they would strike down what's called Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And then after the hearings, the ground shifted and most of the punditry thought they would just strip it all out and slap this president down. But big surprise today.
Well, it was for a lot, apparently. It actually was not for me. I tweeted several days ago that I thought that the court would do just about what they did. I joined the thinking of a couple of people who are good court watchers, Tom Goldstein, who's with the Supreme Court blog.
SCOTUS.
Right. And Robert Reich, and I was, you know, a number of good court watchers realized that Roberts really could not dare to do anything other than uphold the law. That being, you know, had he not been confronted with, say, Bush v. Gore and Citizens United, which are two landmark cases that show pure judicial activism by the conservatives, he might well have come out 180 degrees away on this and not have reached out to find and support it. But he really was locked into a situation as the leader of the court where this is a court that he inherited that was losing ground in public approval and has slipped tremendously. And if they gave it another push, it could be at the tipping point with a case this big. And the court has no way to enforce its rulings other than its moral authority. It's based on logic and reasoning and not partisanship and ideology. So he really had no choice in my estimation. So I called it a couple days ago that I thought he would do pretty much what he's done.
But did it surprise you that Kennedy, who was considered to be the swing vote, voted with the majority? With the minority, I should say.
That did. But it's very interesting. I think what's happened as a result of that, it's no longer the Kennedy court. It's now the Roberts court.
So you think that he, Roberts, is basically thinking in terms of, a lot of people are saying he's thinking in terms of legacy, but you're thinking he's thinking in terms of restoring the public opinion towards the Supreme Court, given that a recent CBS New York Times poll found that 78% of Americans felt that this particular Supreme Court's justices make their rulings based upon personal political bias as opposed to judicial reasoning.
That is part of a broader poll. It shows the slipping public approval of the court as well. Americans don't want a partisan court. They don't want justices ruling by their ideology. They want them to judge based on the facts and the case and the law in front of them. And when you have a ruling like Bush v. Gore, where there's just absolutely no coherent reason other than the partisanship involved and what they did, and again in Citizens United, where they reached out and overreached, if you will, that's the kind of problem he was confronted with. So I think he did what he had to do, and not so much for his legacy, just he's going to be on that court a long time. He's a relatively young man. And if he doesn't want to see that court become totally irrelevant, where indeed it becomes a joke and its opinions have no weight at all, in fact, everyone will be trying to figure out some loophole they can get around them, then he's got to get that moral authority back. And that's what he's done with a ruling like this.
Again, I'm speaking with John Dean, who's a former counsel to President Richard Nixon, and prior to that was Chief Minority Counsel to the Judiciary Committee of the United States House of Representatives, the Associate Director of the Law Reform Commission, and Associate Deputy Attorney General of the United States. He's a best-selling author of a number of books, including Conservatives Without Conscience, Broken Government, How Republican Rule Destroyed the Executive, Legislature, and Judicial Branches, and Pure Goldwater. He's also a columnist at Justia, that's JUSTIA.com, and he Twitter's at John W. Dean. John, you're way ahead of me there, I'm afraid.
Oh, you've got to start tweeting.
I know, but I got a lot on my plate. You know, I basically have a staff of one, so compare that to the other programs that broadcast daily, you get an idea. But let's talk about what the Obama administration appears to have done right. And, you know, Obama is a constitutional lawyer. It looks like they had a kind of backup plan with the taxing authority. Most people thought that the individual mandate would be upheld because of the Commerce Clause, and then they changed their mind about it because it became the kind of the whipping boy in terms of all of the punditry. Do you think that they were wise to have that backup plan?
Well, that actually came up during the congressional proceedings. And that's one of the reasons they structured it as they did in the law. So I think, yes, it was very smart to have multiple theories. They also thought not only the Commerce Clause, but the Necessary and Proper Clause might well do the job. They had multiple arrows in their quiver, if you will, that they were firing. What is interesting, and one of the tips to me, was when I went back and looked at Robert's confirmation testimony, particularly his discussion of the Commerce Clause jurisprudence that would be relevant. It came up repeatedly during his hearing. Chuck Schumer, senator from New York, pushed real hard on concerned about some of the recent rulings of the Rehnquist court that he was going to, you know, he'd been a clerk on that court. He was something of a prize former law clerk of the Chief Justice, obviously a great admirer of Rehnquist. And so Schumer pushed us real hard on his feeling about the Commerce Clause and its impact. And what's also interesting is Roberts is very honest that he has questions about it and some of the landmark cases, and he won't buy into it. And so, in a sense, he telegraphed what he would do today in a number of ways in his confirmation hearings.
Well, we remember from his confirmation hearings, John Dean, that he said, I'll be the umpire, I'll call the balls and strikes, and I won't make up the rules.
And that's exactly what he ended up doing in this landmark case.
So it seems to be what's inherent in this Affordable Care Act, and people are still suggesting that there's still problems with it because of the individual mandate and the taxing authority, et cetera. But it would seem to me that what's fundamental here is that the American public are eventually going to come around, aren't they, to realize it's better to get insurance or face a fine. And there really wasn't ever any fines. There was never any liens involved in it. The best that the government would ever do would be take away your tax refund. So you'd have to be pretty ideological to refuse to join an insurance pool and to forego your tax refund, don't you think?
You would. It isn't a powerful, strong mandate or tax penalty, if you will. It's more of a just a reminder to get people to come in and play in the and be a part of the market, so that this, all these risks can be spread. I think that's probably going to be the enforcement of this law is going to be the least of the problem. I think educating the public about it is going to be the most important problem. If the Republicans can do to Obama what they've done to Obamacare, if you will, he's not going to be reelected. But I think they're getting with it now and beginning to explain, you know, the benefits of this law, what it will mean to people. And it has a lot of important things. You know, it 30 to 50 million people would otherwise be without insurance without this law. I think the president, you know, it was a very bold, not a terribly political move to push for this law. There's a lot of people who don't understand what's in the law. When they hear the separate parts of it, they poll well. When they get the overall polling on Obamacare, we don't want any part of that. Well, you know, being against health care is, to me, kind of sick. These are people who need help.
Right. Well, you know, the president today actually made a bit of a joke about that in his statement, John Dean, where he said, you know, this is not been a winner for him. He didn't do this for political reasons. He did it because he felt it was the right thing to do.
No, that's an act of leadership. When you bite the bullet and you know, he wasn't even for the mandate, as you recall. He was for the universal health coverage rather than, he would, in other words, basically expand Medicare and Medicaid to include everybody, and knew that wouldn't happen. So he bit the bullet and said, well, if this is this is all we can get, this is a wonderful starting point, which it is. You know, the United States is so far behind the rest of the world in health care, and you would think we'd be the leaders.
Well, Mitt Romney, of course, came out today and said that the first thing he'll do if elected president is repeal Obamacare. And he suggested it was a huge burden on the American taxpayer and on business, et cetera.
I caught both the president's and Romney's statement, and I was struck with how Romney doesn't seem to have looked at any of the facts, like the Congressional Bureau, a budget office, who has made a very clear nonpartisan analysis of this law, that it's not going to create deficits. To the contrary, it's going to help them. And the other representations that he made that this law puts the government between you and your doctor, that's just baloney. Someone was certainly going to call him on his statement today because it was laced with misinformation. But this has been a sad pattern of this candidate who has very little interest in the truth of what's going on, but rather trying to fearmonger, to pretend to take positions that are not viable. And while I suspect there is a small audience that follows that, I think that it'll finally get through to people that isn't what this is all about.
So, John Dean, do you think, though, that the Republicans can make an election year issue out of this? A lot of pundits are suggesting that Romney doesn't really want to run against Obamacare. He wants to run on the basis that he'll be the job creator. Already, Eric Cantor has in the House has scheduled a vote for July the 8th to again vote down Obamacare,
It'll go nowhere in the House.
Of course, I mean
the Senate will kill it. It'll just sit there, nothing will happen.
Well,
I think, how does Romney, who has Romney care, if you will, in Massachusetts from his years as governor, run against something that he once thought was good for the people of Massachusetts? It's a tough road. I think for a couple of weeks he will pound this drum for the base, but it's not a long-term winner. And the base alone can't get him elected.
Again, I'm speaking with John Dean, who's a former counsel to Richard Nixon, and prior to that was Chief Minority Counsel to the Judiciary Committee of the United States House of Representatives, the Associate Director of the Law Reform Commission, and Associate Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Today, John Dean is a best-selling author of such books as Blind Ambition and Lost Honor, and more recently, Worse Than Watergate, The Secret Presidency of George W. Bush, Conservatives Without Conscience, Broken Government, How Republican Rule Destroyed the Executive Legislature and Judicial Branches, and Pure Gold Water. He's also a columnist at Justia.com. So do you think then that, is there going to be a backlash? I know this is a sort of political punditry question for the elections, which are sort of months away. But today in the House, they're going to vote to censure the Attorney General, the first time in American history that a cabinet office has been held in contempt. And of course, you know, he is an Attorney General, he's an African American. The whole thing is so trumped up, it's embarrassing to even talk about it. If you really look into it, Fortune magazine has done a very good analysis of what actually happened with the so-called Fast and Furious. Do you think that there will be a backlash to this kind of posturing and grandstanding that's going on?
I cannot imagine that the House in its behavior is winning friends and influencing anybody who's got any intelligence at all. This business with Holder is just pure political theater. It is shameful that the fact that the Speaker would schedule this and bring it to a vote is just lowers my estimation of this man even further than it was. I mean, at some point, it can go nowhere unless they think that the Sergeant of Arms at the House is going to go down to the Justice Department and arrest him and bring him up and imprison him in the Speaker's office. There's no enforcement mechanism because the way this is, it's referred to the Attorney General when there is a contempt of Congress. And the Attorney General is not going to enforce this against himself. It doesn't have to. There are exceptions in the law for this kind of situation. So it's pure show. And the House has never, not in the modern era, ever tried to enforce its own contempt situation. So that, you know, this and the vote on the health care, I don't know what people, how they can gain any respect. Some maybe they'll throw the incumbents out someday and start over.
Well, just in closing then, John Dean, just to return to the Supreme Court and the vote, Justice Anthony Kennedy, of course, was in effect replaced by John Roberts as the swing vote, as you mentioned, on this 5-4 court, that he says, in our view, the entire act before us is invalid in its entirety. He felt that that was his summary of his dissent, which he wrote. Interesting enough, though, the other dissenters, Scalia, Thomas, and Alito, weren't that strident as they have been, and more recently in particular, Scalia was sort of went almost off the rails over the Arizona case, didn't you think?
He did, indeed. He was making personal political attacks against the president, taking on issues that weren't even in front of the court as to what he was doing with an executive order. It was just totally out of bounds.
Well, I thank you for joining us, John Dean. This has been a very interesting day, and I think if you're a supporter of President Obama, you have to say he had a good day, and Mitt Romney
I think Americans had a good day today.
Well, again, I thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with John Dean, who's the former counsel to President Richard Nixon, and prior to that was Chief Minority Counsel to the Judiciary Committee of the United States House of Representatives, the Associate Director of the Law Reform Commission, and Associate Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Today, John Dean's a best-selling author of such books as Blind Ambition and Lost Honor, and more recently, Worse Than Watergate, The Secret Presidency of George W. Bush, Conservatives Without Conscience, Broken Government, How Republican Rule Destroyed the Executive Legislature and Judicial Branches, and Pure Goldwater. He's a columnist at Justia.com, and he twitters at John W. Dean. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back getting a perspective on what this Affordable Care Act will do for women.